This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day to everyone out there listening to us. Welcome to episode 110 of TPF Live, the world's fastest hour of racing talk. I'm Rob Tiansen, joined alongside Brooklyn Jackson and Sky Twig. We're so happy you could join us for this special edition of our post-COTA pre-Richmond edition of our show. We're going from Texas to Virginia, so I'm basically passing the baton from my state to almost Sky State, because, you know, she's kind of a Virginia person by nature, but it's going to be fun. We're going from a really big road course to one of the smaller racetracks of all of Cup Racing and Xfinity Racing, but they do call it the Action Track. And hopefully some of the action that happened at COTA goes on to Richmond, because there was a lot of action that took place at the Circuit of the Americas, or COTA, especially on Saturday, which we'll talk a lot about on our show. And of course, what happened on Sunday, which was a little bit of a throwback to the late 90s when the 24 car used to be such a dominant force on road courses. Well, the individual behind the wins for that 24 car was around, but of course he wasn't driving the car. It was William Byron. So we're going to talk about him too. And did I say 24 car, Jeff Gordon? Yeah, I thought so, because he's actually our guest for tonight's show, or today's show, depending on when you listen to this. So super exciting, because Jeff is probably our most frequent guest on the hot seat on TPF Live. So not so bad for a little outlet that has a little podcast to have Jeff Gordon multiple times already. So just saying, maybe Jeff has a favorite media outlet. I don't know. I hope he does. But anyways, we have so much to unpack from COTA, so let's go bring in the ladies right now and bring in Sky and Brooklyn. So I know as of this recording, we're just a few days away from Richmond race weekend. I'm so pumped up. So we'll start with Sky and then Brooklyn. How are y'all doing?
I'm doing great. I'm definitely excited for Richmond. Like you said, it's one of my closer home tracks. So I was almost tempted to go spur of the moment, but I think I'm just going to stay put, watch it in my good old house on Easter. But I'm pretty excited.
I'm good too. I'm just still exhausted from hearing your COTA stories and living through you at COTA. I mean, I'm exhausted. I don't know how you're feeling, but man, you had a weekend.
I did. 12 one-on-ones, and basically the Xfinity race was the longest race I've covered at COTA in a long time. It's basically started at, like, I want to say 4:30-ish central time, and it didn't end until almost 7 o'clock. For Xfinity standards, that's a Cup race. So it was quite a long day, but a good day. And during these next several weeks, we're going to hear a lot of those interviews I worked on directly from COTA. And if you haven't seen it, folks, I did post a few of my interviews already, but I want to mention, of course, the big one, Jeff Gordon. He's also in the hot seat. It is the same interview on YouTube, but if you like your podcast while you're doing your thing, like yarning or crocheting. I don't know why you'd be crocheting and listening to our podcast. More power to you. I hope you do that kind of thing. Martha Stewart, I'm talking about you. Either way, we're just happy to have everyone listening to our show. Episode 110. That makes us feel pretty old on the show. But we're still 300 away to catching Dale Jr.'s download show, so we're not quite there yet. So anyways, before we get started, let's go hear from our presenting sponsor, SpoilerDiecast.com. And SpoilerDiecast.com is where it's at, whether you shop in person or if you do it virtually or remotely. You can use that promo code, save some money, and get those cars in good order in pretty quick timing. In fact, I think if you try to order the car before Friday, say, because this podcast is going to drop before the weekend, you may get that car before Easter Sunday. Mm-hmm-hmm. Make the Easter Bunny look good, or make your girlfriend feel happy that you got her a car. I'm just saying, you know, just do some good stuff, y'all. So hook your girl up with a little diecast car, like, you know, the one I'm holding right here. You'll feel pretty good about yourself. So SpoilerDiecast.com is where it's at. And also, too, I wanted to mention that I'm excited to have the opportunity to go and review Trophies and Scars, which is Ray Evernham's autobiography, as told to Joe Garner. If that name sounds familiar, he's the gentleman who wrote Jeff Gordon's book in 2015. It's a really great book from Jeff. And this book so far, I'm telling you, is an amazing looking to Ray's life. It's not just your typical stories about how, you know, Ray and Jeff won a bunch of races and all the easy stuff. Ray gets into a lot of details. And from what I'm reading so far, he's had an amazing, he calls himself the Forrest Gump of motorsports. And I would tend to agree with that analogy. So if you hadn't had a chance to go to your local bookstore or go online at octanepress.com, get this book. I'm going through it. And so far I'm enjoying it. I'm telling you, it's like when I was a kid and it would be late at night and my mom would be like, go to bed, Rob. And the lights are still on and I'm still reading my comic book or a book that I really love. I haven't put it down. Sometimes I even fall asleep with the book in my face because that's how good it is. I'm like so immersed into it. So Trophies and Scars, there'll be a review about this on TPF. And also down the road, we'll have the man himself, Ray Abraham, as a future hot seat guest. So looking forward to that. And congrats to my buddy Ray on writing a great autobiography with Joe, with Jeff doing the foreword. So I haven't gotten to that part, so I can't wait to see what Jeff has to say. It's really cool. So this is kind of a Jeff's Gordon-centric episode, number 24. So if you like Hendrick and number 24, this is your show, folks. So let's get started and head on over to Pony Perspectives, powered by SpoilerDiecast.com. Now, William Byron had the complete race weekend, I'll say, at COTA, because the moment that truck was unloaded on Friday and then they put it on the track for Saturday's practice and qualifying sessions, Byron was number one in about everything. Average speed, one lap speed, qualifying for both sessions. The 24 was atop the boards at each instance. Then come race day, what did we see? Exactly. The 24th leading the way, looking dominant. Now, there were some folks who were trying the contrarian strategy, which was to stay out, get the stage points, while Byron sacrificed those positions and points to say, you know what, I'll live and fight for another day heading into the new stage. And by even doing that, he still finished in the top 10 in both stages one and two. That's how good his car was on Sunday afternoon. The only person I thought that could challenge him was Ross Chastain, and he could only hold an off for 11 laps before Byron did the same kind of power move going into turn one. And it was pretty much like, oh, we need the caution. There was no caution. That race flew by so fast that honestly, from a media standpoint, I was like, oh, it's six, the race is over? My God, what's going on here? Like, where's the debris caution? None. No. But let's go hear from the ladies first before I chime in further. So, like, from Sky and then Brooklyn, I'm just curious to get both of y'all's thoughts on whether or not, you know, William Byron is this dangerous threat to win the championship after two victories this year.
Yeah, I mean, Byron has proven, like, last year even alone, that he's definitely been dangerous. I think the 24 team as a whole just has really good chemistry. I mean, they all work really well together. Pit road is typically, there's not a whole lot of issues. There's not a whole lot of penalties there, which I think sometimes is underrated. But if you can get a nice clean pit road, I mean, that can change your entire day. So I think William Byron as a driver, the 24 team as a whole, they're very dangerous. I don't know if they'll win a championship or not this year, but I definitely think they're final four for sure.
For me, he is my championship pick. So, I mean, you can't. At the end of last season, he was right there. I mean, he had numerous wins, and I fully expect that to happen again this season. I mean, he's just, at this point, showcasing why he's in the Cup Series, why he's in the 24, why he's with Mr. Hendrick. So I fully expect them to be showcasing, like Sky said, the same chemistry they had last season, and see them in the championship four. And I would not be surprised at all if he got a championship this year.
I wouldn't be surprised either, because I stood by this pick since the beginning of the year before we even saw cars on track. I know Caitlin Vincey said Byron was her pick to win the championship. I went with him as well. And I'm sticking by it. They won six races last year. They're already off to two victories this season. They've won at two different kinds of racetracks. And by the way, both races have been won on the actual scheduled distance of the race, which is kind of an interesting fact if you think about it in today's world of NASCAR Cup Series racing, because we typically see that late race caution that gets us to overtime. And Williams actually won it without having to need an overtime session, which I found pretty significant. The other thing, too, I want to talk about with William is how I found it ironic or a little strange that he doesn't feel like he's the most confident driver when he goes to a road course. But let's not forget, he won at Watkins Glen last August. And COTA is not an easy track to win at. The track limits are a challenge, as we saw several drivers get busted for track limit violations or even being busted for speeding on pit road. But yet Byron made, and that's not to sound like Larry McReynolds, he made no mistakes. That's incredible to do. And what he said on Sunday kind of fascinated me.
I mean, I don't know if I'm the most confident one when I show up, but I feel like I just focus on, you know, the details that it takes. And once I kind of find that rhythm and cadence of doing the shifting and the braking, and you just start to fall into that place that you've been familiar with, it just kind of, you know, gets you through. So each one's a little bit different, and I feel like the quicker we can find that rhythm and kind of find that feel that I need in practice, the quicker we go. So it's different every week. You know, I think, you know, we just put a good week of prep in, and it was nice to have another 20 minutes, you know, because that first session I was just getting up to speed at the end of it. So it was nice to have another one to kind of get going.
I'm a little nervous if you're not a 24 fan to know that he's like, I'm not confident, but yet he fooled me. I thought he was just like exercising his power to be the best driver all day. And that pit crew got the job done when it really needed to. No mess ups on pit road. Even when Ross Chastain pushed him out of the way and like, I want to lead the way. No, Byron showed no panic. He caught him. Game over. No cautions. That was his race to win. So we'll see what happens. I think the Achilles heel for the 24 team right now is the short tracks. And we're going to one this weekend. So let's go see how they fare at Richmond, not just on Sunday night, but when we get back to Richmond in August, maybe that's a race Sky will go to, but it's going to be pretty hot, I'm sure. I'm just saying that might be a race you might go to, because that's going to be a very fascinating race to see who started off the season strong. And when we get back from the Olympic breaks, who's going to be really, really like making their case to say, you know what, we're 8 months into the season, but guess what, folks, we're still pretty powerful and pretty dominant. So I'll be curious to see what happens with William Byron and crew chief Rudy Fugel when we get down the stretch. Now, on the other hand, of course, another championship four driver from last year made headlines on Sunday, but it seemed like he didn't like the Kyles of NASCAR, because he tangled with Kyle Larson in stage two, and it effectively ruined Kyle Larson's race from there on, because Larson could only muster a 17th place finish. It was strange because he still had a decent car, but just couldn't get anywhere, even with the stage break caution between stages two and three. And then infamously late in the race, he gets into Kyle Busch. And Kyle Busch, I was not there, folks, for that one. I was with a different driver, but not too far from my vantage point. I did see Kyle Busch approaching Christopher Bell, and Busch was not too pleased. I'm not going to replay exactly everything that was said, but Kyle Busch in his mind thought he shouldn't have been roughed up that way. I think he said something to the extent of like, have I ever done that to you? And then Bell just had nothing to say to that. And I guess Busch was like, good, because you have another one coming to you, or something along those lines. And Busch doesn't talk cheap. When he says he's going to do it, he will do it. But I know it's normal to see drivers disagree in the heat of the battle. And we're going to talk about that in our next topic, because the next topic is the one I was around for, because I want to give my account of what happened. But we'll start with Brooklyn and Sky. You know, what can we expect with this whole situation between Bell and Busch? Is this going to be just much ado about nothing, or will Busch act on his words?
Like you said, Kyle Busch is not someone who says something and doesn't follow through. If he says something to your face, I fully expect Christopher Bell to end up in the wall or something happened to him. I mean, I'm not saying next week, but when the opportunity arises, I fully expect Kyle Busch to, I mean, execute on what he said. So, I mean, is this a full-blown, like, legacy rivalry? I don't think so, but will he follow through on what he said? Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that this is all in Kyle Busch's court. I did see that it looked like Christopher Bell tried to like handshake or like dap up Kyle Busch after, and Kyle Busch just walked away. So it looked like, Christopher Bell was trying to extend the olive branch there. But I definitely think this is all in Kyle Busch's court, and I agree. He's not the type of person that's gonna say something and not deliver on it. And that's kind of horrible, especially you don't want Bush to be the one. I don't think Bush and Logano, that's two that you don't want to be on your bad side
Right.
because
Those are two
they'll
people you
take you
don't
out
want.
at the worst expected time and a killer time when you need those points, you need those laps. Next thing you know, oh, the eight put you in the wall. So I don't know how I feel too much about it. I do think I was watching Denny Hamlin's podcast. He was talking about back when Ty Gibbs and Joey Logano got into a scuffle, and he said, "You always got to be the first to extend the olive branch. Like, when you're on the racetrack and something's happening, move out of the way and let him pass. Like, give him something to be like to show that you're sorry for what you did." I don't know if I see Christopher Bell doing that. I think that he's a very like, "I'm here. I deserve to be here" type driver. So I don't know. Kyle Busch is going to get him back. I have a bad feeling it's going to be at a time where Christopher Bell least wants it to happen.
Well, I 120% agree with that because that's the scary part now when you're waiting to be on the receiving end and you just don't know when that's going to happen. You would rather just have it happen right away to you and know that the score has been exacted and then you can just move on. So as far as Bell's concerned, he'd rather just get spun out by Bush on lap one and then say, okay, all right, I deserved it. Let's go, wipe the slate clean. We're done with it. And Bush may not even do it right away. He might wait until like halfway into the season. Or during the playoffs, when Bell needs to get a break from him, and he might just give him hell trying to get through the field. So that's kind of a scary situation when you have Kyle Busch do that. And when I think you said this guy that when Joey Logano is one of those two drivers you don't want to anger. Yeah, we've seen that happen. I mean, Logano and Hamlin, when they had their little deal in 2013, I mean, Logano made it known he was going to get him back, and he got him back for sure. So stay tuned, as I guess they say. I mean, Kyle Busch through the years, I don't want to say he's mellowed out. I feel it's weird to say that because he's called
No, I
rowdy
mean,
for a
I agree.
reason.
I know what you're saying because I definitely feel like, and I feel like a lot of people would say this, RCR Kyle Busch is different than Joe Gibbs Kyle Busch. Not maybe drastically, and not in a core way, I don't think, but in a external way. He's still saying the same things, but he's saying them in a calmer way almost, I think.
I have this theory. After I seen that he came at Christopher Bell, he was on that one show, the Pat McGrath or whatever. Do you guys know what I'm talking
McAfee.
about? Yeah, that show. So he was on that show, and they were literally like, "Oh, you're this bad dude who's always the villain," and da, 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 and they're hyping him up. And I'm like, I felt when I was watching it, I was like, I bet you Kyle Busch goes into his villain era again because that's what he realized. Like all these people were like, "You're known as this guy. Like we love you for being this guy." Boom! Next week, here he is in Christopher Bell's face, the next teammate. So I don't know. I feel like maybe he's reverting.
That's a good point. I mean, we could be seeing the tides kind of change back to the tides we're used to, but I mean, I'm just saying the tides have kind of been different as of late. I mean, I'm not saying tides can't change back, but who knows? I mean,
I will say this from the media standpoint, Kyle was, he's a lot nicer to talk to. And when I say nicer, I don't mean like he's a Mr. Rogers kind, but I would say when I was in the bullpens, I tried to ask him softball questions because admittedly, I didn't want to get chewed out by him because he has the reputation. Even if he asks a good question, he may not answer you politely. But I've dealt with Kyle Busch, the Joe Gibbs era times of Kyle Busch, and he's always been fair with me. And even when I was trying to like chat up him up in the bullpen, because I have seen drivers say, Kyle's one of my favorite drivers. And I mentioned it to him. He's like, funny, I've never heard anyone tell me that I'm their favorite driver, mostly because I think I intimidate them. And I felt like saying, no, man, I don't think that way, but whatever. Okay, go explain your side of the story. And it's just interesting to see how he's evolved as a driver. Not just going to RCR, but I mean, I can speak to this because me and Kyle are about the same age. It's amazing what happens to you when you go from your te late teens to all of a sudden you're looking at 40. And unlike me, he's got kids. Kids will do that to you. They'll change you a little bit. Doesn't mean that you all of a sudden forget to be aggressive, because let's not forget, Jeff Gordon, after he and Ingrid had their family, Jeff Gordon became quite the bad to the you know what with drivers. And I think that, Clint Boyer, Brad Keselowski can attest to this, and Jeff Burton can attest to it too. You get older and you do calm down, but when you get angry, you get angry. So if I'm
That's
Christopher Bell,
a
I'd give him a little bit of a wide berth, if you will.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, with the you kind of naturally everyone mellows out as they age. So I would be interested to see, I mean, how much of this is like the Joe Gibbs to RCR factor versus like just naturally he has two kids now. I mean, and he's just, I mean, he's aging like any human does. That would be an interesting study.
And that's the kind of question I keep asking him, because I just really want to get to the, I want to go beyond Kyle Busch, the I don't want to call it the actor, because athletes are not actors. They're people like you and me. But obviously
No,
when
it's
they
a
get to the
persona.
race, go ahead.
No, I mean, I was just gonna say it's a persona. I mean, Denny Hamlin said this before. He's like, and I'm the first I've said this, I mean, myself, I mean, several times. There's the person Kyle Busch, there's the person Denny Hamlin, and then there's the driver Kyle Busch and Denny Hamlin and whoever. There's work, Denny Hamlin, Kyle Busch, even Chase Elliott. I mean, they're two different people sometimes. Sometimes they coincide, yeah, but sometimes they're two different people because they
Oh,
have
I
to be.
agree. Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. And I think that's what makes it fascinating. And that's the kind of thing I want to kind of shed light on when I do talk to these drivers, is to show that what they see on TV or read on social media or see on social media, it's different from who you may get when they're not in their fire suits or just wearing your t-shirt, like most of the drivers have been doing with those interviews I've done. Like it's interesting to see how Nick Sanchez is like, and you find out he's a certain way compared to what you may think in your head, or Roger Carruth or Haley Deegan. Am I naming drivers like a shameless plug? Yeah, I kind of am, but I'm just what I basically what I'm trying to say is it's interesting because like Sky works at her job, and I'm sure Sky job version of Sky is way different from the Sky that's on our show when she's NASCAR Sky, and then so on and so forth. We're all different people, but that's what fascinates me, and I think one of our mutual friends, Jenny Lingle, she says this a lot. She goes, "I want to get to the root of these people on a psychological level. I want to know what makes them click beyond what we see on, the surface." And I feel the same way too. And Kyle Busch has been one of those drivers who I'm just very, very fascinated by, because I always felt like he got such a bad rep at Joe Gibbs Racing. Everyone always portrayed him as a bad guy, and I felt like saying, what if he's trying to do that because that's who he is as a driver? And then you find out he's actually a nice dude. Like that's the kind of stuff I want to unfold. So, Kyle Busch, I'm extending an invitation to you to be on TPF's hot seat segment. I'm just saying, man, it would be super awesome because I want to know what it's like. I want to know what makes Kyle Busch tick, in other words. So we'll see. Now, moving on to Saturday's race, which of course I thought was the best of the three races at COTA. Setting up the scenario for y'all. So at COTA, we saw that there were distinct contenders: Parker Kligerman, Shane Van Gisbergen, yes, I could say his name, AJ Allmendinger, and Kyle Larson. Those were the four that could really win the race on Saturday. And then things happened to those drivers that made it tough for them to try to win the race. Namely, Kyle Larson had a situation with his, I believe, his right front tire, and he was begging crew chief Greg Gibbs to let him pit. He gets the chance to pit, but it would almost certainly nail, like, get him done with trying to contend for the race. Because let's face it was like within the last five laps, he's going to restart 20th. No chance in hell he's going to win this race. And then AJ Allmendinger, he loses the lead to SVG, Shane Van Gisbergen. And then AJ's kind of like angry with the team. He's like, you guys changed the car. How dare you change the car? And Logano is making a funny observation from the booth. He's like, that's our excuse, everyone. When we find that we've gone to second place, we always ask the crew chief, what did you change? And the crew chief will say, only a half pound of air pressure. And then the driver will say, you ruined my car. And it did seem like that. I don't know if that's what happened to AJ, but his car just wasn't hooked up in the last stage. So anyways, AJ drops out of the contention because I think he got busted for a course violation in the S's, which when you watch the replay of the race, it really wasn't by much, but they, I hate to say it, I think they relied on some kind of AI software to determine if a driver crossed out of the track limits, and he did violate the track limits according to the AI. So AJ has to start in the rear of the field along with Kyle Larson. So these two are trying to make their way to the front, which made things exciting. Enter Austin Hill, who none of us saw coming. He gets the lead on that last restart. So it was Austin Hill, Shane Van Gisbergen, and then a really hard charging Kyle Larson. He's chugging along. He comes from like 20th place. He gets to third because of all of these overtime restarts. So all of a sudden we have a 3-horse race. And right behind him was Parker Kligerman. And I think it was just around or after the S's, at least before turn 11. You can kind of see in the far distance that the 48 and 26 may have gotten together. Sage gets into the wall or spins out. He's not in contention anymore. Parker has no chance to catch the leaders because he's trying to collect a car. He gets to finish in the top 10. So then SVG is trying to root Hill out of the way. He does. Kind of forgets that Kyle Larson's right behind them. So then as those two are trying to like get their cars wowed, Larson scoots by and says, bye guys, thank you for letting me win in the 17 car. Oh, by the way, I led the last lap and I won. But he wins the race, wins the first Xfinity race for the number 17 team, which Jeff Gordon was super ecstatic about. He was so excited, he was trying to follow me to victory lane, and I wasn't going to victory lane. So if you saw my post-race video with Jeff and we're walking like not to victory lane, he was telling me afterwards he was trying to find victory lane. I was like, I thought we're just walking to talk. Anyways, Kyle wins the race. And then afterwards, Parker and Sage, they kind of get into it. So I will say listener discretion advised, because I will play a portion of the clip. You'll hear kind of what happens when I was in the middle of all that. So let's hear what they said to each other.
You check. You guys. Literally checked up. I was giving you the spot back and you just fucking nailed me.
Giving me the spot back?
I was giving you the room.
You bumped me and then you just
run
me over.
It was a stack up, dude. What do you mean it's a fucking stack up?
Good shit. Good shit.
So my goodness. Yeah. You know, we're all adults. People swear. But it was a very interesting situation where Sage yelled to Parker, talentless, talentless, talentless. And then Parker was claiming that there was a big stack up, and that's what led to the whole thing. So we'll start with Sky and then Brooklyn, because, man, I'm dying to hear what you guys think, because I was there. I've expressed my thoughts. What were your opinions and perspective of Saturday's race in terms of Kyle's victory and the little chit-chat between Parker and Sage?
So, firstly, I think I should have kept Kyle Larson as my number one last week when we did this podcast, because I had him and then last second I switched him out and I should have just kept him. Learned my lesson there. But, you know, overall, I thought the race was very good, like you said. The cars that we thought were going to be good were the ones that were pretty much, you know, good. I definitely think the late race cautions, they definitely changed the outcome drastically. It was definitely very obvious that if that caution didn't happen, it would have went a different way. But sometimes that's just how NASCAR is. It's just how it rolls. And fortunately for Kyle Larson, he was on the receiving end, the good side of it this time. So he got out with a win. And it's cool, you know, the 17 team to be in victory lane. As for the scope, you know, I think that fighting is good in NASCAR. I'm a big hip-hop fan. I'm a big hip-hop head. And most of hip-hop is just beefing and rap beefing and stuff like that. And I think that competition is good. You know, it drives people into the sport. It makes the two of them want to work harder. They want to prove each other wrong. They want to prove, you know, that they deserve to be So I'm always, as long as it doesn't get too physical, I'm always for some, a little bit of scuffling. I think it makes for a lot of good things can come out of it, a lot of interesting moves, a lot of stuff like that. So I don't mind it too much. I do think it could have maybe dialed back a little, but you can't control people. It is nice to see that people care enough about the sport and are still very passionate. I always try to say, at least we know he's passionate, even though he is acting kind of crazy right now, but
My Hendrick squirrels are succeeding in the 17 car from a few weeks ago. Rob, Sky wasn't on that episode, but Rob knows what I'm talking about. I mean, we all knew they would do well in this car. I knew they would get victories. And Skye, I'm glad that you said you always condone a good little NASCAR scuffle because I've also told Rob multiple times. I was like, I'm the first one to say we need more scuffles. I'm not saying like blood, the whole thing, but I mean, a good scuffle never hurt anybody. Like, because that's what makes you not turn off the race as soon as the checkered flag waves. Because now I have to watch to see, oh, who's gonna go yell at who? Like, who's going to go up to somebody's car and like stick their head in and start yelling? So as far as just like watching it from a media standpoint, I was also wildly entertained that you were so close in proximity, Rob. Oh my heavens. That's what made this, I mean, it would have been entertaining and eyebrow raising anyway, but I was just highly entertained that you sent the video in a group chat, and then lo and behold, 2 seconds later, I open Instagram and there you are again on the actual NASCAR page.
Yeah, I mean, I knew something was gonna happen because I felt my watch vibrating on my left wrist, and I was like, uh-oh. Something tells me this has hit social medias. And I was sure enough, when we walked back to the media center to wait for Kyle's reaction. Actually, I was walking to Jeff, went with Jeff after the race. Then I walked back to the media center and I was like, there are 20 notifications. I'm like, this is not normal for Rob Teeongseon's world. And I looked on my computer. There I am on NASCAR's IG, is it a reel? Is that what they call
It
it?
was a
Reel?
reel, yeah.
Oh, so I'm actually relevant. I was on a reel. I was like, what? That's me. And if you could see my reaction, okay, first people talk about myself. A lot of people are giving beef to the ECR guy. Can I just say to clarify for the record, I know Dale Earnhardt Jr. brought it up on his podcast. I know people on Reddit have said, oh, you shouldn't have gotten away. He interfered with the fight. I will tell you from the human standpoint, and this is not like a journalist, this is real Rob talking. Thank God for that guy being there because I felt Sage's presence on my right shoulder. And I was like, oh, poop, he's gonna do something. He doesn't even give a rat's butt if I'm right there. I think he wants to go and get after Parker. But I'm interviewing Parker to get a good sidebar story, which I'm still working on because I'm trying to like connect it to Richmond. And then Sage comes up to him, and you can hear what Parker says. He's like, dude, dude. And then Parker, not Parker, Sage was like, why'd you have to do that? And then that's when the whole thing got out of control. The ECR guy comes through, and I'm like, thank you for being there. Because if they're going to charge at each other, I hope I'm not collected in that, and I'm bloodied up and I have to go to the IFC, the Infield Care Center. Because I'm like, you don't need to see me get hurt my back or get gashes on my face because I have to interview Jeff Gordon and Alex Bowman the next day. It was interesting to be in a near a scuffle. It could have precipitated the physicality, honestly, without that ECR guy interfering. And even Sage Karam's significant other said some parting shots to Parker, which that's how personal it got. I mean, she was getting involved. She wasn't happy with him. And then when they walked away to the Xfinity garage, Paul Williams, who's Parker's PR guy, he's the guy with the white hair and the beard. If you watch the clip on the telecast or on the other feeds, you'll see him making a face like. And I said, And then I said, what was that all about? And then Paul goes, oh, Sage just being Sage. So I turned to Parker and I'm like, dude, are you all right? And Parker goes, he's like still hype up. He's like, yeah, man. Yeah, I'm fine. And then I said, hey, man, I know I recorded that. I'm sorry. I don't have to post it if you don't want me to. He goes, no, dude, just go for it. So thank you, Parker, for giving me the green light to post that clip, because that was easily the most viral video I've ever put up on social media. I think as of last check, it had 48,000 views, which in my world, that's a lot. So that was pretty cool. And I don't want to go through it again. But if I have to, hopefully I'm at a good distance that I can capture all of it. But I don't want to have my folks see me with a black eye and they go, what happened to you, Rob? How come you got beat up? I'm like, I was trying to record a clip and then there was a fight, you know?
And then Sage Karam just entered the picture.
Yeah, right? It's just, oh man, that was something else. And it's just funny because I wasn't even looking for a fight or argument. Like, I just wanted Parker's post-race reactions because, you know, the protocols are so different now for media. Before, they would have them come to us behind a barricade fence. I don't know if that was the case for you at Kansas, Brooklyn, but
with Kansas, it was pretty much the same. We weren't behind a fence in Kansas, but we had specific pit stalls that we stood in, and they picked specific ones that they sent to us. Yeah.
Okay, so that's changed. So we got to approach them, like we go to a designated pit stall. But as soon as they kind of like debrief with their crew and talk to TV and radio, then we got a chance to go over to them. So I saw everyone's kind of busy with everyone else. Parker's by himself. So I'm like, oh. And then Parker kind of was like, yeah, I'll talk. And then that's what happened with him and Sage. And then afterwards, we're all like, what the? Huh? So I didn't see what happened at the moment. But now that I've watched the race on full replay, I was like, oh, okay. I kind of see what happened. I see where Sage is a little upset, but it'll be interesting because unfortunately Sage is not a full-time driver for Sam Hunt Racing. So I am kind of curious to see what will happen in the next road course race, which unfortunately, ladies, we have to wait until early June for that to happen. So Portland, I'm telling you, it's going to be an interesting race in the West Coast. So it's not going to be all peace and hippie vibes in Oregon. It's going to be angst and maybe a little bit of spiked vodka and CRC getting together. So we'll see. It should be very interesting, to say the least. We're actually going to stick on the West Coast topic, if you will, y'all, because moving on from COTA, and we'll go back to COTA before we get to winning time. So earlier this week, NASCAR is potentially looking to race on the streets of Long Beach, California, which is typically home to the race weekend for IMSA and Xfinity in April. And it's been the case for that way, at least since I've been born, and even F1 raced there. So the fact that we could possibly see Cup, maybe Xfinity, maybe trucks going to the streets of Long Beach, California, that would be insane, amazing. But I mean, I thought before, I was kind of vehemently against the idea of us going to recourse racing, and then Chicago happened, it changed my mind. So we'll hear from Brooklyn first and then Sky. How special would it be for us to take our beloved series and have it on the Long Beach streets in California, given how illustrious this course is?
I think it would be very special. And I love that you said, you used the phrase, and then Chicago happened and changed my mind, because that was very similar to my experience. I went into Chicago. I sadly was not present at the Chicago last summer, but I went into that weekend just super skeptical, like, oh my heavens, what's going to happen? I mean, this is kind of me as a person anyway, like, oh my heavens, like, what's going to happen? Like, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, it's just very different. Like, I don't know how to feel about this. But it was amazing. I loved it. It's fabulous. And I'm still not over really Fontana getting taken away. So maybe this will, I know, Rob shedding the tears that I, yeah, I mean, that's almost the first thing I think about when I wake up every morning. Not really, but I think that'll make up for it a little bit.
So I was all for Chicago. So it's interesting to hear that you guys were a little skeptical. Like, I was I was excited. I was like, something new, something different. Like, I love, I don't know, I'm like a different type of NASCAR fan. And I don't mean that in a weird way. I just, a lot of people are very true, like, oh, like short track racing. Oh, like, I'm like, I want to see NASCAR just expand and become this great thing that I know it can be. And doing things like the street race and maybe even going to Long Beach, I mean, that would bring it to a completely new market. If you're bringing it to a new market with a new type of race, like a street race, I mean, that's like a wow factor. That might bring extra people in who maybe come for that race and then realize, hey, wait a minute, this stuff is actually kind of cool. And then all of a sudden they're tuning in the week after and the following season. So I think that it's good to try different things. It might not work out. They might do it for a couple of years and realize, hey, we're wasting our time and money doing this. It might switch somewhere else, but you never know unless you try. And I think that NASCAR can they're getting to a point where they can start branching out and getting fans from all types of walks of life. So I feel that this is just an amazing step in the right direction, personally.
Right. Absolutely. I had very mixed feelings about Chicago because, like you said, absolutely, we do need to try like new stuff. But where I was coming at it, maybe more skeptical, was like, what's the racing going to look like? I mean, that I just hadn't seen. I mean, what's the racing going to look like? How are it was raining that weekend? What's that going to look like? But I love the city of Chicago. So I was definitely, there is multiple parts of me that were thinking about it, like the journalist Brooklyn, I mean, the person Brooklyn that likes Chicago, and the, like I said, I'm more of a skeptical person anyway, but I definitely think that Long Beach is a good idea.
It will be fascinating to see if this will come to reality, because the biggest factor that could decide if this will happen or not, besides local governments, is Roger Penske, who, of course, is the owner of IndyCar, and, well, would he want to see NASCAR go to their dojo? I don't know. Personally, I'm the kind of person that thinks motorsports is for everyone, but that's my opinion. I don't mean like from a diversity standpoint. I mean more from like, hey, look, if you're an IndyCar fan, you can be a NASCAR fan, or vice versa. If you like dirt track racing, maybe you'll like, I don't know, sports car racing. Racing is racing to me at the end of the day. But what would be very fascinating to see is if we do get this, because it's quite evident that NASCAR needs a Southern California date. And it's kind of sad we don't have Fontana. That's why I did the fake single tiers or double tiers.
I know. I really do miss it.
I miss it too, because I seriously remember when California Speedway, we can call it that, I guess, now again. California Speedway was built and ready for 1987. That track was so state-of-the-art. And by the way, you know who owned that track before? Roger Penske. Little commonality going on right now, folks. He sells the track to NASCAR, and I was like, no, keep the track. And I'm not dissing on NASCAR. This is my honest opinion, but once Penske sold the track, because obviously he's a businessman, he's gonna do what's best to get some extra capital, I suppose. Unfortunately, by doing that, kind of saw the nail in the coffin for California Speedway to have its facilities upkept, the asphalt kept in good shape. Because unfortunately, as the years went on, people were like, oh, the asphalt's aging. We know it's going to get repaved and the racing's going to suck there. And unfortunately, we're never going to know now, because that track's in its current 2-mile state. It's gone. Will we actually even see it as a short track at this point? I don't know. We're told different things. It seems like every day. So to go to Long Beach would be a great idea. I hope Penske doesn't, block the way. I hope he goes, you know what? As long as it doesn't happen during my race weekend, it can happen. I don't care when you all go to Long Beach. Just don't go in April and take our date away. Because I can just see some traditionalists going, oh, don't you do that. Oh. In my opinion, though, I think it'll be a really good race. I was skeptical about Chicago more from a traditionalist standpoint, because you youngsters have different ideas. Being a little bit older, I was more like, road courses, street course racing, NASCAR, how's that going to work? Because mechanically speaking, I can't see the cup car working. But then I just forgot how the cup cars, they've changed. This next-gen car is a versatile beast. This is not the same, grandpa stock car with Werther's candy and stuff. This is This is Sky's NASCAR. This is Brooklyn's NASCAR. So I guess I'm having to adapt to it. And it's good NASCAR. I'm not saying it's bad. It's great to see the sport evolve. And this opens the possibility that, you know, other markets that can't build a purpose-built track for NASCAR to say, hey, come to Denver. We want to see you race in our big city in Colorado. Or Baltimore could get a race, which would be pretty awesome to see, because y'all had a race with IndyCar, and I thought that was one of the better races, honestly, in my opinion. So it would be a great, great opportunity, is what I'm saying, to take the sport to different U.S. locales, maybe even go to Canada. You know, I would love to see that happen, because our friends to the north, they sure love their stock car racing. I did mention Baltimore, and I would be remiss if I don't say, you know, our hearts and thoughts are going to the folks that are infected by what happened in Baltimore, and so terrible to see what happened. So I hope everything will be all right. That was a tough situation to see. And that's all I'm going to say. Like, no, I'm not going to like go beyond that, other than we just hope everyone who's been impacted by that, you know, our thoughts are with you to get through these difficult times ahead. And all the people in Baltimore, too, because they're good people for sure. Now, with that, we're going to move on to our superlatives and the Goodies Headache Powder Award, because I wouldn't be able to do podium perspectives without that. So this is the time in the show, folks, where you get to give me who you thought impressed you the most of the three races at COTA and who needs a Goodies Headache Powder or some barbecue from the great state of Texas after what happened at COTA. So, Sky, Brooklyn, and then me. We'll give our thoughts right now.
I'm still deciding. I have two. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll just go with Christopher Bell. I'm going to go with Christopher Bell. He definitely impressed me, because I remember vividly Mike Joyce said after Christopher Bell had pitted, he was like, oh, well, the math's not mathing. He doesn't have enough laps. He couldn't contend for the victory. Goodbye, Christopher Bell. Pretty much is what he said in the broadcast. Next thing you know, couple laps remaining. Oh, who's in the top five? The 20 car. So that, I fully believed Mike Joy. I was like, oh, sorry, C-Bell. See you next time. And then all of a sudden, I was like, wait a minute. What is happening? And he's charging. If he had a couple more laps, I mean, we could have had like a really good finish, you know? Still props to William Byron, because he definitely earned that. But Christopher Bell, he did a heck of a job. That's all I can say. I mean, he really recovered well, and he showed what he was there to do for sure.
He must have heard Mike Joy say he was done, essentially done for the day, because he is the first person to say, I love when you count me out. I love being underrated. As far as for who impressed me, and this may be a little biased because I was on Alex Bowman duty this weekend as a journalist, but Alex really did impress me, because, I mean, he had a top four finish last week, and he got another P4 this week. I mean, he started 17th. He was able to just work his way up, drive to the front. He was there when he needed to be. And just put in the work that needed to happen. And that's what I think we just need to see from the 48 camp this season.
Amazing you mentioned Alex, because that's exactly who Jeff Gordon was really proud of most of in this past weekend. He said,
yeah, I mean, Alex is one of those guys where the bigger the challenge, it seems like the better he does. So I'm gonna leave here and try to find more ways to really challenge him even more. he's a great race car driver, and it just, you know, just takes the whole combination to get the I mean, they didn't qualify well, but they had a good car, it seemed like, all weekend, and I think his confidence in the car, especially once they dropped the green flag, it showed, and Blake called a good race.
When Jeff says good things about you, that's more than enough validation, to say the least. So for me, the driver who impressed me the most this past weekend was actually Connor Zillisch. And I know Connor probably isn't the happiest with himself after the truck race, but let me tell you, he's only 17 years old. Great driver in any kind of vehicle. And we talked about him last week on our show when we previewed like how he might do. And I think I went as far as to say I picked him for the win to win the race. And I know he didn't win the race, but he overcame so many mistakes and he still almost won at COTA. So to get a good top five finish, he learned a lot. I know he beat himself up a little bit about it before he went to Pensacola for the ARCA East race. I can't imagine having that kind of maturity behind the wheel at 17, and he's acting more like he's 27. He's that good, and he's not even the finished product yet. So with Trackhouse guiding him along with Justin Marks and Pitbull and all the people, Team Chevrolet, I know that he's going to be in great hands. So he really impressed me the most of anybody at COTA. I would have said Parker Clerkenman, but that would be a little bit too easy because, I don't know, I was impressed with his restraints, I guess. But it will go to Connor for this week. Now, for the person who probably needs a Goody's Headache Powder Award, I would have to give this to Michael McDowell because he was a trooper to try to finish the race when his power steering went away in the last few laps, or actually, I think during stage two of the race. Now, to do that for a huge 3.426-mile road course with 20 turns, that is not an easy task. I'm sure he's still a little sore because you could see during the stage break cautions, or when he was on pit road, when they showed the cockpit camera view, he was like stretching his arms and like trying to move them, and he was aching. I mean, Michael McDowell's a big boy, but as burly as he is, that was a terrible beast to try to handle. And I know he couldn't finish the race. I was impressed with him, but he definitely needs a Goody's Headache Powder for his body to heal for Richmond, because that's not an easy track to go to after COTA. It's to go to this action track that's 3/4 of a mile and thinks it's a super speedway. So let's hope that McD is going to be okay. But Sky, Brooklyn, who are you going to give the Goody's Headache Powder Award to?
I'm going to give my headache powder to someone in advance. I'm going to give mine to Christopher Bell in advance because I would not want to be looking out my rearview mirror for Kyle Busch for who knows how long until he plots when he thinks it's a good time to execute on what he said. I genuinely, if I were Christopher Bell, I would be like, this is not an ideal situation. So, C-Bell, have your headache powder for whenever you need it. Nobody knows when you'll need it, but you'll need it, bud.
My worry with Christopher Bell and this Cowboys thing, not to segue back to that, but Christopher Bell always, like, the last 2 years, he's won his way into the Final Four. Who's to say Kyle Busch isn't going to pay you back during one of those races, you know? But my original person that I was going to say was Michael McDowell. And as we were doing, who did a good job, I was like, I need to hurry up and come up with a backup in case somebody says Michael McDowell. So fortunately, I got a backup. But I'm going with Chase Elliott because he was doing really well. I mean, he was up as you would expect him because he's a wonderful road racer. But, you know, there's track limits. And you do it too far into the race, and then there's just not a whole lot you can gain back, especially if your car isn't, you know, William Byron good. So he just needs a lot of headache powder for a lot of races since last year after when he ended up on the slope. I'll tell you what, he needs just the whole truckload of headache powder.
I did mine in advance, and you're doing yours for the past year now.
Exactly.
I mean, I guess for Hendrick fans, because I know Penske fans are feeling the pain for Logano's season, Hendrick fans can relate to that with Chase Elliott because you expect better from Elliott. And it's not to say the effort's not been there. Logano's effort's been good too, but it's just like misfortune after misfortune happens. And then Elliott, like you mentioned, Sky, he got really snake bitten by, you know, this software AI thing catching him off, you know, shortcutting the course, which, for one of the most successful road course racers in Cup history, that had to be very demoralizing because there was no opportunity for him to catch up, because the later the race went on, like you pointed out, the harder it was to gain track position. And we didn't have a caution period for him to be like, you know what, this didn't hurt me too bad. We'll make some adjustments. We can, you know, tinker with the air pressure, wedge here, wedge that, or whatever. None of that was able to happen for the number 9 Napa Night Vision Chevrolet Camaro. So yeah, I think he definitely needs a Goody's headache powder, not just for now, but since his situation with the snowboarding incident, which I know we've been also saying that Elliott's close to winning a race again, and the confidence swagger hopefully will be there. I know Bill Elliott, Chase's dad, was actually at the track this past Sunday, so I think while Bill from Dawsonville was trying to give his son some needed encouragement this past Sunday, and I think he may have helped him with the spotting side of things, but still, yeah, Chase Elliott, oof, he definitely needs a good eatetic powder for sure, along with Michael McDowell, but at least Michael's pain hopefully has subsided, so maybe that's just more just like a headache thing more than a body aching thing, because oh, I couldn't imagine driving a heavy car at COTA with no power steering. I've driven at COTA with power steering in an electric car, and that was the most beautiful experience I've had, one of the most beautiful experiences I've had in my life. So to try to do that without power steering, no, wouldn't recommend it to anybody at all. Now we're going to get to the final part of putting perspectives. This is when it's winning time, as Jack Edwards of Nesson would say. So we're going to give our picks for this Saturday's NASCAR Xfinity Series Toyota Care 250 winner. And the defending champion for that race is Chandler Smith. And oh, by the way, he's in a Toyota this year, but he won it last year with a Chevrolet. And then Sunday night, Easter Sunday. So happy Easter in advance to y'all. Sunday night, we have an Easter night special with the NASCAR Cup Series Toyota Owners 400 at Richmond. Kyle Larson is trying to defend that victory. Maybe try to like run as well as he did in the spring and not like in the summer when all of Hendrick was out to lunch in the August race. Because that was a dog of race. So I'm going to call it a dog of race, meaning it's not good. So we'll see what happens. So Brooklyn, Sky, and me, let's hear our picks for this weekend.
This weekend for Xfinity, I think Mr. Parker Kligerman is going to redeem himself from the scuffle. Just put that past him and cruise right into victory lane. And then for Cup, I have Martin Truex Jr. going to victory lane. The Toyotas have been running well. He's historically done pretty well at Richmond. So there are my picks.
Okay, so for Xfinity, I struggled a little bit. I'm just going to go with Austin Hill because he just always just backs into wins. So I'm like, you know what? I feel like he's a safe bet, and I'm not too good at always betting on these. So I'm going to go with Austin Hill. And for Richmond, I'm basing this truly solely off of vibes only. And I'm going with Joey Logano. Hopefully he can finally get into victory lane this weekend. It'll be a little Easter present. I would appreciate it.
You're like, Easter Bunny, just be nice to Joey for a change. Let's not have eggs on our face. Let's actually have an egg as in victory lane egg. So we'll see what happens on that. Very interesting picks because I will say trends have pointed out that the ladies of TPF have been pretty good with their picks. While me, who's supposed to be the racing expert, hasn't really done a lot of good work this season. But anyways, I don't know why I talk like I'm really sassy. I'm not sassy. let's put our thinking caps on for this race weekend. So Parker, actually, to my surprise, I'm not dissing on you, Parker, okay? You're cool. But to my surprise, Parker got himself a really good top 10 finish last year. He finished 8th in the Xfinity race. So maybe Brooklyn's onto something about choosing him for Saturday's race. But I will say, and I like the idea of Austin Hill packing into his victories, because I got to get to the little story real quick. In the post-race availabilities, I will say Austin Hill wanted everyone to know he's sick and tired of people saying he's only good at Daytona, Talladega, and Atlanta. He's like, I am good. We're good everywhere, okay? Andy Street, my crew chief, and I, this 21 team, we are amazing everywhere. So this was a huge statement for us to do well at COTA. We're good at anywhere we can go to. So he wanted me to share that, and we'll write about that this weekend. Oh, man, this is a tough one, because Xfinity, this is probably going to be the best race of the entire weekend. I'm going to make that declaration right away. I'll say Justin Allgaier gets the victory on Saturday. I mean, look, the guy has been so close to winning a race all season long, and I can only imagine turn one at Phoenix when he was about to win the race 5 laps ago, and then that tire decides, I don't care. let's crash. And then they crash. So I think Justin's going to get the job done, finally get the victory lane. And then for Sunday night, I like the idea of a Toyota driver winning. Sorry, Ford and Chevrolet. But so far with the oval side of things on this package, it seems like it really benefits Toyota a little bit more. But I am going to go, ironically, we've been talking about him in a negative light, but I'm going to go with Christopher Bell to win the race. Kind of a weird pick. I don't know. Christopher Bell, the reason why I'm going to go with him, if Chevrolet is a William Byron, right? And Ford is to say, I guess either Joey Logano and Ryan Blaney, I will say Toyota is to Christopher Bell. That's my logic. I think he's kind of like the numero uno over at Toyota. He's obviously their answer to Kyle Larson, to William Byron, Logano, and Ryan Blaney. So that's my pick, unless Kyle Busch decides to do him dirty on the last lap and kind of did do what he did to Dale Jr. in 2008, which would be... it would be kind of funny because in 2008, Kyle did that to Dale Jr. and everyone was all over his, you know what. So I'm kind of curious to see what the crowd reaction would be, say if those two were battling side by side for the win and Bush's car just washes up the hill and Bell gets into the wall, Kyle Busch wins. What would the crowd reaction be this time around versus 16 years ago when Kyle Busch was public enemy number one?
Against Christopher? I don't know. That's really interesting. I mean, I feel like Christopher has several people that like him. I mean, nobody's really gonna, I mean.
I think it's gonna be more people just hate Kyle Busch. So,
yeah. That's assuming it's just people.
How dare you do that to Christopher Bell? Yeah. Now, and like three weeks ago, they didn't even care about the 20 car, but some people just hate Kyle Busch that much.
Yeah, I think that's for sure. Like, I think it would be people taking up for Christopher against Kyle, but that's assuming it's this week and not in October when we've all forgotten about this. And then once it happens, we're like, oh crap, he did say that.
Exactly, because he could dump him at the Roval. He could dump him at Kansas, even, you know, just an accidental washing up of the corner. You know, oh, I'm sorry. You definitely don't want to do that at Atlanta. Don't do it at Daytona or Talladega. But you never know. Like Watkins Glen, he won't be racing. Oh yeah, I'm thinking Cup. I'm sorry. I don't want thinking Kyle Busch Xfinity. I should think Cup Series. It could literally happen anywhere. So if Bell's winning the race and say Busch is several laps down, that's like the worst case scenario for Christopher Bell. Oh, because he could exactly be like, got
that's
you out
what
of the
I'll
way.
My headache powder.
Yes, absolutely. So maybe I should take back that Christopher Bell pick. But no, I'm going to stick with it. And we'll ride it out and see what happens on Sunday night for Easter Sunday. So besides making your picks, racing fans, we want you to tweet to us or write to us. Our handles at the podium finish. If you want to see some pictures from your Easter Sunday baskets, because I'm sure the Easter Bunny is going to probably give you some NASCAR goodies. I've already gotten some from the Easter Bunny, which none of you will see unless I show the video. But yeah, this is really cool. It's called Winner Circle Wave 6 for the race winners. They finally announced this on LionelAuthentics.com and Lionel Racing's socials, but these are pretty sweet. No, it's not a product placement, even though they are our friends. Just trying to show off what I got in the Easter basket already. So thank you, Easter Bunny. So yeah, tweet to us. Let us know what you think, folks. And if you happen to get the race-winning picks correct, like Brooklyn, like Sky, and none not like me, then we'll send you an in-stock diecast car from SpoilerDiecast.com from this season in 164 scale. Now, folks, I know you loved our opinions and the entertaining thoughts. Now be prepared to be entertained with this week's Hot Seat interview with Jeff Gordon.
I'm Rob Tiongson. And I'm Jeff Gordon.
And you're here on the Podium Finishes Hot Seat segment live from Circuit of the Americas on this Sunday, March 24th. We're excited to have Jeff once more in the hot seat. I think you've been on so many times, we pretty much call it the Jeff Gordon segment. Don't you think?
Well, especially on March 24th. I like that. I didn't even think about that. But no, I'm always happy to join you on the show.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you, Jeff. And let's actually talk more of the present stuff, and then we'll get to the fun past stuff.
Okay.
So, obviously, you've been the vice chairman of Hendrick Motorsports since 2021, and I'm kind of curious, how have you adjusted to that role for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years after what you did in your racing career and working for Fox NASCAR?
Yeah, I mean, very fortunate to come into, a race team that's already well-established, has great people in place, great management, you know, great leadership with all the way, from what Rick Hendrick has put in place. So I get to walk into something that's not broken, right? I just, my role is to, you know, how do we maintain this very high level of competition, as well as, you know, giving as much return on investment back to our partners. Just continue to elevate as much as we can and keep this legacy that Rick has built alive. And so I'm having a blast. We've been very successful, and things are going really well. It's certainly been a huge education for me to be in this role versus, you know, being on the race team and now seeing all the different departments and all the people that it takes to make our organization, successful and the challenges that come along with that. But also having a great time with those challenges.
Now, how much would you say your driving experiences help out? Because you've got four young drivers. They're all very competitive. And oh, by the way, you know what that was like working with teammates when you were the young gun once before?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, being on a race team, especially as the driver, you realize just how important that very small group that you're working with on your race team, your crew chief, your engineers, your pit crew, mechanics, all those people, how important they are. But then you also get a good idea of the broader scope of it, of how important it is to share information and lean on your teammates and work with them, not just on the racetrack, but off the racetrack, and what Hendrick Motorsports has built with four teams and why they've been successful, and you know, how all four teams working well together makes the whole organization, gives you a better opportunity to win individually, but also as a whole. That certainly has been valuable experience for me to have, so I can relate that back to our current drivers and crew chiefs and teams. But it also helps me look at, how we work together, how we work as an organization, and understand that that can sometimes be very challenging as well. There's positives, but some days it can work against you as well, and how to manage them.
Isn't it almost like having a family with two kids like you have in your house?
Yeah, definitely. You're not always going to get along, but you're family, and you realize that, that dynamic can be challenging at times, but you got to work hard at it. But you also know that when you're working together and working in the same direction, that brings in a lot of harmony to it as well.
Absolutely, and there's no better person to know that all that stuff but you, Jeff, because you know the racing side, the business side for sure. And I know back in the 90s, you and Dale, you guys were great partners of businesses and growing the sport. And the sport's going through another resurgence in popularity. You know, how important is a thing like the Full Speed documentary on Netflix and just everything you see on social media?
100%. And it's not just one thing, right? It's multiple different things. It's getting our drivers, not just the Hendrick drivers, but all the drivers in the sport, getting them out there, making sure that people know who they are, their personalities, what they're doing on the racetrack. You want to have somebody to love, somebody to hate, but you want to keep people engaged and understanding the nuances and the ins and the outs of the races, the race teams, the personalities behind it. And I think Netflix has done a great job of showcasing that to a broader audience than what we're used to. But you got to also reach out and make sure you're staying connected to the core fans too. So yeah, a combination of all those things. We need more star power, and we need our drivers to show, their personalities on and off the racetrack. And that's, what we talk about at Hendrick Motorsports with our guys all the time is representing those brands that are your partners, but also connecting with the fans and trying to bring new fans into the sport.
Certainly. And I think the social media game for you guys has really gone up so many levels because you guys have so much fun with, like, the Google searches or, like, doing, like, these little fun things. Like, did William say that or, you know, yeah. Whose idea was that?
Yeah, our content team and our social team has really stepped up the game. We put a lot of energy and focus into that, and it's paying off, and our drivers are seeing the benefits of it, our teams, our partners, and so they're embracing it. And so when you see those things working, then and you see the numbers come along with it of people that are seeing it and viewing it and clicking on it, then that means that you need to do more of it. And so it's nice to see our guys and gals and everybody involved embracing that and doing some unique things that make it stand out.
You're doing that too, because during the Super Bowl you're like, go San Francisco 49ers. I love seeing that.
Well, I have been a longtime 49ers fan. I had an opportunity to take my daughter to her first Super Bowl and enjoy that together, even though our team didn't win. And I had to deal with Boyer again with his Kansas City Chiefs. But, our social team said, hey, while you're there, could you please do a social post? I'm like, happy to, because I'm enjoying being at the Super Bowl and cheering for my Niners.
Could you imagine if your younger self had all of this going on in the 90s and having, like, the social media things that we have today back in 1997, 98?
Whew. Yeah, it'd been a different world for sure. I mean, we were working hard to try to get in front of as much media and viewers as possible. And I think the sport did a great job with what, you know, we had to work with back then. But, it would have been a whole different ball game. I would have liked it. You know, I would have enjoyed that back then because, it's a better way to connect your fans. You get instant gratification, but also instant feedback, good and bad. And, it certainly would have – I think our sport would have been extremely popular with social media or without it.
Sure. Now let's actually talk about the past now, in conjunction with the 40th anniversary of Hendrick Motorsports. And believe it or not, Jeff, I hate to say this, it's been 30 years since your first two victories in the Cup Series, but, you know, how pivotal was it to get the Coke 600 win at Charlotte and the Brickyard 400 win, the hometown victory, in the seminal moment of your career?
Yeah, I think there are several pivotal moments in my career. I mean, getting aligned with Rick Hendrick and Hendrick Motorsports, bringing Ray Evernham into that, building the 24 team to what, you know, we did in 1994, winning the Brickyard 400, but that first win at the 600, such a big race, a huge, you know, moment and opportunity in my career and our career with what was to come from that. It just, you know, told us, it solidified us of, hey, we're here, we can compete at the highest level against the best, and we can win at the highest level. And it just gave us a lot of confidence that we were moving and doing things right and in the right direction. And I think that's what allowed us to go win the championship in 95. And kind of from there, the rest is history, I guess.
Another milestone I'm going to bring up, because I might as well bring it up while we're here. It's been 25 years since that daring pass in the Daytona 500. And I've always wondered, what went through your mind when you went on the apron and saw Ricky Rudd's car slow, but you knew you had to get past Rusty and Mike Skinner?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I was sort of setting up that move off of turn four, and I think it had been building for a couple laps of just, you know, the push and the pull of the aerodynamics and the draft at that time. But I saw, you know, that building a couple laps before that, and so I just tried to plan a run off of turn four to make that move through the tri-oval, because it's a lot harder to block that move if you're the leader of which way the car behind you is going to go. And so I kind of went high and they moved high and I went low and got the opportunity and got the opening. I had no idea that there was going to be a car rolling on the apron slow, and that was Ricky Rudd. But I also knew that was my moment, right? And I could not back out of it. I just had to thread the needle, and maybe it looked a little closer and tighter on TV. I mean, I definitely clinched for a second there, but when I saw the opening was there, you know, I knew I just had to stay in the gas. And back then, they didn't have the rules that they have today, where you can't go below the yellow line onto the apron. So you used every bit of real estate on the racetrack you could, and I had the run, I had the real estate. I just had to make sure I got between Ricky Rudd and I think it was Bill Elliott at the time.
And that was a crazy race. You made my 13-year-old self panic attack at the house. But when you made it through, I was just like, okay, Jeff, just hold off Dale Earnhardt. And that's the worst person to have right behind you.
Well, it is. You know, he's the best on those types of racetracks. I learned a lot from him over the years, and I was able to apply that to a certain degree. We had a great race car, got in position, and, it was, you know, I knew that I had to take everything that I had ever learned up to that point and apply it to hold him off, and certainly was nervous. I wasn't gonna celebrate until we crossed the start finish line and had the checkered flag waving, and fortunately we were able to do that.
For sure. I know you have to get going soon this race day, but for my last question, and hope we get to catch up a little bit later on if we can. Now,
hopefully in victory
lane. I would love that for sure, off the record. Obviously Hendrick Motorsports has given so much to you with fame and celebrity, but I'm just kind of curious from a candid perspective, what has Mr. H, this organization, given to you that you could never conceive back in 1992?
I mean, besides the 93 wins and the 4 championships, it's changed my life. You know, Rick has been like family to me and has, you know, opened up so many doors and opportunities for me, for my family. The life that we have today is all because of Rick giving this young kid a chance, you know, back in 1992, if you want to be technical, when it all started. And just embrace that for all these years, and now having the trust and faith in me to be the vice chairman, be partners with him on the automotive side as well as the motorsports side, that's a dream come true for any kid. But it's been really, really special to have the relationship I've had with Mr. and Mrs. Hendrick and the whole Hendrick family. I take this responsibility very serious and put a lot of work and effort into it because, I want to see Hendrick Motorsports shine and thrive for the next 40 years.
I'm sure it will. And if it has the excellent seal of Jeff Gordon, you know it's going to have that done. So, again, Jeff, thank you so much for the time today.
Yeah, thank you.
I know you're a busy guy, but let's catch up a little bit later on this year. Maybe after Victory Lane, but hopefully later on this year.
Perfect.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
And that was Jeff Gordon in the hot seat. My thanks, of course, goes to Jeff Gordon and John Edwards of Hendrick Motorsports for making that interview possible. It's always amazing to have Jeff on our podcast throughout these years. And like I said, he's been on our podcast so many times. It's amazing that someone of his stature and all the responsibilities, he makes the time to be with us each year. So it's such a pleasure, a privilege to have Jeff on our show. And you can see the video version of that on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/@RobTYongson. So go ahead and like and subscribe my channel. I know I sound like a millennial. Well, I am a millennial. I mean, like a youngster. It's weird saying that. And then the article edition will come out during the weekend. So look forward to that. Now, before we wrap up the show, I want to show that thanks as well to Legacy Motor Club, because when I got to the media center on Saturday, before the day started, there was an envelope on top of my workstation. It had my name and initial, first initial of my last name. And I was like, uh-oh, what did I do now? I opened the envelope, I saw this, and I was like, what? And it was really cool to get this amazing note from one of the team representatives for an upcoming story we're working on that we were supposed to do in person, but things changed at the last second. We worked it out still virtually. And I will say, through the 16 years I've been covering NASCAR, this is super cool to get a nice thank you note like this. I never forget when people are really super helpful and kind. So it's super cool to get this. And it's always a pleasure to work with this Legacy Motor Club team. They're classy. Jimmy Johnson, Richard Petty, Cal Wells. And of course, their team representatives like Amy Walsh, Leighton Seville, and JP Main. They are rock stars in this sport. And it's good to see good people still around in this industry, given how we can get very competitive with each other and things happening when it gets stressful. But it's super cool to have this happen. And yes, I hope to do this in person with a certain driver. Maybe this July in Indianapolis, when I get to cover this year's Indianapolis. I wish it was the Indianapolis 500. This year's Brickyard 400. I can't wait to cover it. I'm excited for it. I'm already wishing it's July, but that would mean the temperatures in Texas will be god-awful and 120 degrees. So I'm not looking forward to that. But maybe Indiana will be, 50 degrees cooler than that. So that would be a nice change. But for closing thoughts, I will just say COTA was wild. I'm still drained. I know y'all were asking how I'm doing energy-wise. I would say I'm about 80% now. It was a lot to get through. I'm glad I did all those workouts and I won't ever run a 5K before I go to the racetrack again. I've learned to just take it easy and let the racetrack do the walking for you. But I will say it's super neat to see the relationships I've built over the years. I don't want to say it's rewarding me now all of a sudden. It's humbling when people remember what you do and they make the time to chat with you. And it's not just, you know, like, hey, good job, sport. It's like, we actually talk like human beings. And that's super cool in this digital age because it's a little too easy to sometimes just type emails and text and that's it. To have that human interaction or virtual interaction like this, it makes things worthwhile to me. And my favorite part of the whole weekend, honestly, besides the interviews, was getting to meet Errol Almendinger, who's the little baby boy of AJ Almendinger and Tara Almendinger. So I finally got to meet him on the grid on Saturday and Sunday, and he's so adorable. And I don't know if Tara listens to our podcast. I hope she does. Tara, I'm honored to be Uncle Rob. So hopefully Indianapolis will maybe... little Arrow will be talking even more and hopefully being okay with the flyovers because those can get loud too. But Sky, Brooklyn, do you guys have any closing thoughts?
Yep. I seriously just love you watching you be at the racetrack. I feel like I'm able to learn a lot from you even though I'm not there. So I value just continuing to learn from you and watching you have fun. And I am a road course fan through and through, but I'm ready to go to Richmond, ready to go short track racing. Short track racing always shows up and shows out. So let's go to Richmond.
Yeah, I'm excited for Richmond. And I mean, I'm excited anytime NASCAR gets four wheels on the ground and turns some laps. So I'm very excited. I'm very happy for you, Rob. You deserve all the success that is coming your way for sure. I'm just a little baby and you picked me up and you were like, hey, I can help you. I can mentor you. I can show you the way. So I do appreciate that. So, yeah.
It's always a pleasure. And that's kind of what I feel like my role is, besides trying to make my dreams come true, is to hopefully help others have that and accelerate y'all so you don't have to go through the growing pains I had to go through when I was once a youngster myself. So whatever I can help out with so that the journey isn't too painful, that's when I'm here to help you out and all the great team over at the Pony Finish out with too. And it's kind of the word fun in me. I think some people may not get the idea that I have fun because I can be a pretty intense leader, and Sky and Brooklyn can attest to that. But yeah, I do have fun. I enjoy getting to cover racing. For me, fun is the gratification of knowing the hard work we all put forth gets recognized. And I'm saying we're trying to do to get the awards, but it's just very validating when the people that, you know, whether you've looked up to them or you work with them to get the stories, they come back to appreciate what you do. That makes the sacrifices you do to be doing this sport, whether it's remotely or like me at the racetrack, you know, two or four times a year, it makes it worth it. Even if that means you're missing time with family as they're getting older. But you remember to be young, to enjoy every opportunity. So I love it. And I have my own family too in racing with you guys, because you guys are pretty much family to me too. So I mean that from the very bottom of my heart, that every weekend when we do these podcasts or we work on articles, it's not just you guys are my coworkers and I'm your leader. Ha ha ha. Like, I feel like this is my second family. And I wouldn't do this if y'all weren't family to me. So that's what I have to say. And I'm really looking forward to my next race because I feel like I have some unfinished business when I get back to the racetrack. I'm excited to go watch these next several races from home. Don't get me wrong. I'm going to recharge, going to keep working out, keep running. I have a 5K next month, or when we get to listen to the show in April, I have a 5K in April that I'm looking forward to doing. And then when we get to July, yeah, thanks, Guy. When we get to July, I hope to be at a racetrack and get to see the Brickyard. And maybe I'll kiss the yard of bricks. Maybe. We'll see. I would rather kiss a girl before I kiss the bricks. That's all I'm going to say. It's a little bit more indelible for sure. I don't know. But anyways, let's not get too sappy. I think we got really sappy. So anyways, I think this is a great time to go put a bow in our show as always. So for Brooklyn Jackson and Sky Twig and Jeff Gordon, I'm Rob Tionks and saying thanks so much for tuning in to TPF Live episode 110. For our prior 109 episodes, you can hit those up on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Episode 111 awaits us next week, which will be the post-Richmond, pre-Martinsville edition of our show. Our special guest for next week will be William Byron. Willie B. So stay tuned for that. It's going to be a fun, fun, exciting show because it's also the weekend of the 40th anniversary of Hendrick Motorsport. So until then, folks, as I always like to say, let's all go get the checkered flag. And until next time, so long, everyone.